This is Music Weekly from Guardian.co.uk. I'm Rosie Swash, and welcome to what we sincerely hope will be the best thing to happen to music since Ray Gunn put out an official apology for, well, being themselves. And on this week's show, there's chat from James Ford and Jazz Shaw of Bleepy Bleep Masters Simeon Mobile Disco. There's new music from Mike Snow, Fan Farlo and Andrew Morgan in Singles Club. And we've got more blog feedback than we know what to do with, thanks to last week's guest, Manny of the Stone Roses. And yet we promised you the best.
And you may find yourself living in a shotgun shack. And you may find yourself in another part of the world. And you may find yourself behind the wheel of a large automobile. And you may find yourself in a beautiful house.
While I'm sure that song needs no introduction, I will tell you that it was Once in a Lifetime by Talking Heads, which can only mean our first interview is with the inimitable, brilliant and slightly bonkers David Byrne. Not content with being the musical force behind Talking Heads, Byrne has been making music by himself and with numerous collaborators for the last 30 years. He's just written a book called The Bicycle Diaries, but as of last week he was enjoying the sunshine in Ghent, which is in Belgium, ahead of playing a festival there. I was lucky enough to join him for a cappuccino or two and a bit of a chinwag about his latest project. Byrne will be taking over London's Roundhouse for his Playing the Building exhibition. And as he explains, it really does involve playing the building. But where did he get the idea from?
I thought it seemed obvious, and I was kind of surprised that no one else had done it, to propose that just attaching kind of mechanical devices to bits of a building, an old building like that, and have them make noise, all just controlled by a controller, in this case an old pump organ where the keys have been modified, so they're basically a series of switches, and the public is invited to come in and play the thing. So it was not really a performance or show that people come in to watch or appreciate, but something where the public becomes part of it, or they participate in something they do rather than come to something that they watch. The Roundhouse, a lot of people will know it from performances and things, and it has all these great arch supports and hollow metal columns and things like that, that are kind of perfect for this kind of thing.
Your album, the most recent album, Everything That Happens, saw you returning to what I suppose is your longest standing collaborative partner with Brian Eno. Mm-hmm. What is it about him and working with him that keeps you going back over the years to work with him again?
Well, we share other interests besides music, so that allows us to sort of get along. We don't just talk about music.
So you are buddies as well.
Yeah, we can do that. If we can hang out as well, we can chat over dinner. He calls himself a non-musician, although he actually can play in a certain kind of way fairly well. But he mostly thinks as a non-musician, which allows him to some extent to step back from what he's doing and not get wrapped up in the technique of fingering or chords or the things that musicians tend to kind of overly focus on. And he can kind of step back and actually hear what's happening, or think about the big picture, think about the structure of the music or the texture of it. And he thinks in those kind of terms, which I find I'm able to do as well, to think of music as texture as opposed to chord progressions, let's say.
Thank you.
done anything together in a really long time. So it was kind of going back and saying, well, let's kind of reactivate this collaboration and see what happens. He was playing me some tracks that he hadn't been able to finish to his satisfaction. And I'd done kind of one of little collaborations with various people over the years. So I said, you know, I feel confident I know how to do this now. If you want help trying to finish up your stuff, I'll have a go. And if you don't like it, then that's the end of it.
So there was a big flurry of news, music news stories about possible Talking Heads reunion.
Oh.
Which involved you refusing it, but obviously it was under the headlines, you know, Talking Heads reunion. Is it frustrating for you to have people constantly going back to something?
Yeah,
a little bit. You know, 3 decades ago.
Yeah, because it tends, I tend to think it's about the listener of a certain age trying to recapture a moment in their youth and hoping that we can help them rekindle whatever they felt at a particular moment. And I thought, that's not my job. That's not what I do.
Yeah. And you have no desire to rekindle that period?
For myself, no. I mean, I lived that period. I don't need to go through it again. It was wonderful, but it wasn't like it was that I haven't enjoyed other things I've done equally well. I know other things I've done, and for the most part, haven't been quite as successful. Some have, but most haven't. But in a way, that doesn't bother me that much.
You still perform Talking Head songs as part of your...
Yeah, yeah.
You don't feel a distance from the material.
For a while, I did. For a while, as some people do, when they kind of leave a popular band, they kind of disown it and refuse to perform the material for a while, which I did. And I got lost some fans as a result, but I actually kind of do like the songs that I wrote and that the band did back then, so they've been kind of reincorporated and kind of using the Brian connection as a theme for the concerts that it allows a lot of that stuff to be performed.
And you must have noticed in your concerts that it's not just a listener of a certain age who likes the
that's true.
You've put yourself down there a little bit.
I can't seem to face up to the facts. I'm tense and nervous and I can't relax. I can't sleep cause my bed's on fire. Don't touch me, I'm a real live wire. Psycho killer, qu'est-ce que c'est? Fa 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 fa. Better run, 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 run away.
One of the things that the themes in your lyrics that crop up in the recent work that you've done with Eno, and also the, you know, the Talking Head stuff that you did, is kind of preoccupation with what home means.
Oh. Yeah, I just keep doing that.
You've got to stop that.
I know. I guess it's a way of asking about who you are, who I am, or asking myself who I am. Is this where I belong? Am I comfortable here? Am I comfortable in my body? Am I comfortable with myself? Because the home's not just the house you live in. It's also kind of the... whatever the psychological space you make for yourself. So I think it's all that, asking myself over and over again, are you all right now? How are you doing now?
Because it's that to me makes sense from the way that you describe how you felt, you know, we were talking earlier about being obsessive and driven, but not particularly happy. But you don't see it, you seem to be the opposite of that now.
So, yeah, quite a bit.
But it's still a question that...
Yeah, but it's still a question. And that just keeps coming up. The answer might change a bit, but yeah, keeps coming up. Yeah, is this it? Or is this it? Are you happy now?
That was David Byrne, who is in London until the end of August for his Playing the Building exhibition. And Bicycle Diaries is out on Monday. You can read my huge interview piece with the man himself on guardian.co.uk/music. Now, recover yourselves, compose, while I welcome my guests, Tim Jones. Hello.
Hi, Rosie.
Hi, how are you?
I'm all right.
To your left is Mr. Paul Lester, he of New Band of the Day fame.
Is it fame?
Yes, it is in my eyes.
Yeah, I regularly get accosted outside this building and most other buildings, actually, in central London. It's when I go to the outskirts, it gets really, really kind of scary.
Well, your presence here today allows me to move seamlessly into the segment we call Singles Club. And we kick off with your choice. It's Andrew Morgan and Victory is Passing. That was Andrew Morgan with Victory is Passing. Morgan is a Kansas-based singer-songwriter who trades in Baroque chamber pop and who a certain critic said should be feted all over the world. There should be rolling news reports on the man and the making of his second album because Andrew Morgan is, basically, the king of pop. Mr. Lester, you
I wrote the king of pop and then I kind of qualified it and said the king of chamber pop.
That's very true.
Yeah,
I've taken it out of context there like every good hack. Defend your hyperbole, please.
Well, basically, you know, every so often, since the death of Elliot Smith, now Elliot Smith did allow Andrew Morgan studio time. That's how he got his career off the ground. But every so often, there is one of these breathy voice young boys from America. They do attempt to do this thing that Elliot Smith did so well, certainly towards the end of his career. And I think Andrew Morgan does it better than anybody else. And I just think it's if you like that kind of sound, if you like the Zombies, you know, in the late 60s, that sort of chamber poppy, baroque poppy thing, very lush, lots of strings and woodwind. I actually made a list because I wrote about Andrew Morgan in my new Band of the Day, you know, sleigh bells and French horn and timpani, glockenspiel and harmonium and all that sort. So basically, not just guitar, bass and drums, it's very ornate, very layered, and lots of attention to detail has been taken. If you like that kind of thing and you like that kind of voice, Colin Bluntstone-esque voice, it sounds permanently depressed and sad at the nature of existence and the fact that my girlfriend's left me and all the other things, that's just me, by the way, I shouldn't have had that coffee, then you will like this chap, Andrew Morgan. Actually, his whole career has been a litany of disasters, just recording this album, apparently he was almost killed when his apartment building was struck by a tornado. Struck his apartment, something was derailed, a toxic allergic reaction almost caused vocal cord paralysis, somebody committed suicide, someone else was put into a sanatorium, and the whole thing was just disastrous. So there is an air of kind of tragedy almost about this chap. And I say this kind of with a sense of flippancy only because I got an email from Andrew Morgan after I did the new Band of the Day. He was so ecstatic. He was walking around Japan and he read the new Band of the Day and he just stayed up all night just ecstatic with what I'd said about him. So there was a kind of a happy ending to all the turmoil that he had to endure to record this album of beautiful music. I think it's beautiful music anyway. You might think it's revolting, but I think it's really beautiful. and he kind of emerged very, very happily from the report that was written about him on The Guardian Online by Paul Lester.
I feel like I've been on an emotional rollercoaster.
It's been a journey. I should be on the X Factor.
From lows to highs and even higher.
At all points in between, yeah. And the whole album is like that. It's just relentless.
Well, this is the thing is, I listened to the rest of his stuff. This I quite like, actually. But yeah. I feel bad now. I don't want to suck it off. Because I actually do like the breathy Americana that you were talking about.
Yeah.
Particularly like Cass McCombs, who is not particularly big. I think he's on Domino.
That's right.
Records. Really, really similar stuff to this. But I think I don't like the arrangements. That's what it is I don't like.
Is it too ornate?
It's too ornate. And because he's got that breathy quality to his voice, I think there should be more to bring it out. I know that it's kind of on purpose.
Yeah.
But it, in a way, it becomes the weakest part of the song. because of the arrangements, it becomes so washed over by everything else that's happening in the song.
It's quite busy, isn't it? It's quite, and I like that actually, because my feeling is always if it's pared down, I always mistrust it a little bit. I like just to be everything but the kitchen sink, because I grew up, you know, Brian Wilson, Burt Bacharach, that whole approach. And this is a budget version of that. I understand that, but I just like the fact that he has the ambition to try and, you know, recreate that sort of sonic grandeur.
Tim Jones.
Yeah, I think a lot of the songs we're going to be reviewing actually have got a similar thing where they are almost like bedroom versions of big music. When you said it was going to be an Elliott Smith-style thing, I was thinking, because Elliott Smith's one of those people who rip him off are just so ghastly, aren't they? It's the last thing you want to hear, just terrible people with an acoustic guitar talking about their pain.
Yeah.
And, you know, most of them don't, you know, have a Paul Lester article to pull them through at the end of it all. But I thought this was really, really lovely. It was, you know, the breathy vocals were brilliant. And it reminded me quite a lot of, had quite an 80s thing, I thought, whether, I don't know if it was a C86 thing or maybe, kind of slightly reminded me of Sonic Youth. Is that a really,
really
crazy thing to say?
No, I see what you mean.
It's just the melody, basically, and the way it was delivered. The melody didn't really vary up and down the scale, did it? It was almost quite stayed within a very brief range.
That's actually, if you removed all of the instrumentation and the mellotrons and the harps and the girls' choir, and you played it in a hardcore fashion, it could have appeared on Daydream Nation. Maybe there's something about the chord sequence that would lend itself to that sort of treatment. Or not.
So there you go, from chamber pop to
to noise pop.
to noise pop to grunge in a sentence.
Yeah.
That is Victory Is Passing by Andrew Morgan. It's out now. His MySpace address is myspace.com/MorganAndrew if you want to hear more. Next up on Singles Club, it's Animal by Mike Snow. Snow. I think there must be something in the water in Sweden, because they're just so good at pop records. Obviously, I'm not the first person to say that. This has been around for a while, but I didn't pay too much attention to it. The first time I listened to it in full, the very, very, very first notes, which you didn't hear that there in that clip, but if you do listen to it, you'll hear, reminded me of the beginning of Hey Bo Diddley. Stay with me. Stay with me. But then it loses that feel. You know, the lyrics are nothing particularly profound. I had a hole in me that I tried to fill with money, but the hole just got bigger. Although, you know what he means. It kind of feels at times like it's the pop record that Animal Collective could never quite bring themselves to make, you know, because it's, you know, obviously has the potential to be quite commercial, catchy, you know, instantly catchy, which they would never allow themselves to do. I think the chorus is awesome. Yes, I said awesome. It just makes me happy when I hear it. And that is...
And nobody wants a happier Rosie Sparks than us.
Exactly. And you, Paul Lester, I know you like it because you've talked about this man on New Band of the Day.
Yeah, I did. I like them. And it's funny today, because I don't know about in real time, but when I say today, I did write about how Swedish groups and French groups seem to be better at doing pop music than British people. They seem to, maybe it's the distance from the country, and they've got a kind of, maybe it's an encyclopedic knowledge because they're sufficiently detached from it. I don't know what it is, but Sweden and France do better pop. If you mean by pop, you mean the stuff that was happening in the 80s, from the Police to Human League or whatever. They do it so well. Yeah, I like the stuff they did for other people. I like the idea of a production unit going to the studio and doing their thing. I think I was immediately excited when I heard about that. I thought they were going to make a record that was kind of like Toxic by Britain. I'd love the idea of a white indie unit making a record that sounds a bit like Toxic, and it wasn't quite like that, but yeah, I mean, rhythmically really interesting, and you know, reminds you that actually the Police, before they became awful, were awesome for about 18 months.
You said awesome too.
I know, because you were right. Yeah, the Police were really good, and it is very stingy. You know, his vocal was stingy and the melody was stingy.
Stop ruining
you're killing myself.
Tim Jones, I like nothing more than see you happy. Does this song make you happy?
I love it. I think I agree with what Paul said, actually. It's almost puts you off slightly when you find out that they wrote Toxic, and then you start thinking, oh, well,
It's just a churned out.
Yeah, why have you gone and made a kind of indie sounding record after that? Stand Alone, I think it's brilliant. And I think, like what you said about Animal Collective's, right, it's just what you wanted from them. It's what you've always hoped, and they never quite got there. Again, with what I was saying about Elliott Smith, I think the same with the Beach Boys as well. Bands who rip off the Beach Boys, it's always quite depressing. You end up with bands like The Thrills and all of that. But I think at the moment, there seems to be quite a lot of groups that have finally worked out how to kind of take Brian Wilson's sound and go somewhere with it. And it seems to be a kind of bedroom sounding, psychedelic sound. And I like the fact that that's happening.
Psychedelia Smith.
Psychedelia Smith.
All right, that's Animal by Mike Snow. It's out to buy and to download this very week, as is the band's self-titled debut. Finally on Singles Club, it's Fanfalo and The Walls Are Coming Down.
They started at home, then went farther gone, if our father's same lies, we all have the same shoes to fill. The preacher's symbols of your empire.
The Walls Are Coming Down by Fanfalo there. A London-based indie pop quartet fronted by a Swede, and his name is Simon. They've been knocking around for a few years now, and they've even toured with Snow Patrol, but don't let that put you off. But wouldn't you know it, they've only just got round to releasing their debut album, Reservoir, from which this song is taken. Tim Jones, tell me why you like this.
Well, this
song
is a typical ballsy choice from me. Well, last time Paul Lester was in, I remember talking about how I only ever bigged up Faye indie records, and this is probably as wet as it gets. To be honest, I like it no more than the other records I've heard this week. I've liked them for quite a while. I went to see them ages ago when I first saw them, and I thought, this is a very nice indie pop group. They make nice records. But what I think is very interesting, what I think is probably the talking point about this record, is how a lot of bands at the moment are really obviously influenced by the Arcade Fire. And I think that's interesting, because normally when a group influences a lot of modern records, it's normally a kind of back-to-basics group that everyone can actually learn the songs quite easy, like the Libertines or the Sex Pistols or something like that. And, you know, I remember when The Darkness came out, everyone was like, oh, God, we're going to get loads of these bands. And someone said to me, no, we're not, because no one will be able to play like that.
Mm.
And it's very hard to
get... Thank God.
Yeah, exactly. But the Arcade Fire, you know, they make quite, you know, big, challenging to a degree music.
Mm.
But, you know, you've got bands like the Maccabees, you had My Latest Novel, I don't know if anyone remembers them, and now you've got Fanfare. They all seem to be trying to create that similar thing with, you know, huge crashing orchestras and things, and it always ends up sounding trying to be big, but maybe a little bit weedy. But I really like his voice as well. It reminds me of Zach from Beirut.
Well, I've written here, it strikes me as a bit Arcade Fire, a bit Beirut. Neither of those are bad things, but his voice is the thing about it that doesn't grab me.
Okay.
And this is going to be quite surprising to people who heard me waxing lyrical about Wild Beasts last week, but I find his voice quite annoying.
Really?
So I don't know why, it's just, it seems affected rather than quite a strong voice or something particularly natural. But Paul Lester.
Well, yeah, I do feel like I need to listen to some Slayer and Kid 606 after I've heard that, just to sort of, you know, douse myself. But an interesting point, yeah, I think you're absolutely right, isn't it? The history of rock is actually the history of bands being influenced by the groups that are easiest to rip off. And that's why I think influential isn't a particularly good compliment. But that was rhythmically quite interesting. And I think that and Andrew Morgan are both, I don't know, you probably need to get a musicologist in here. They both seem to have been in Walt's time.
Ah.
Yeah, you see what I did there?
Yes, we ended in on an interesting note. That was The Walls Are
Which is probably a first. When I'm here.
That was The Walls Are Coming Down by Fanfalo, our last song on Singles Club, sponsored by Wet Indie this week. And it's out right now. Well, last week the blog was inundated by Stone Roses fans, and yet another really fascinating debate about how good they were. It was really amazing. But amid the tourists, it was really interesting. Amid the tourists, there were our firm favourites professing actual thoughts on the singles. Endnote said, "The new Radiohead track is awesome. I must admit, I too shed a tear when I listened to it."
Japantha said, "It wasn't the music of death metal disco scene that offended, although it was a bit crap. It was the misnomer. There is no metal involved at all, and certainly no death metal.
Tell us what you think of Fan Farlow, Andrew Morgan and Mike Snow on the blog, and let us know what you think of these other tracks that are out to buy now. Beyoncé, Sweet Dreams. Calvin Harris, Ready for the Weekend. Party dress, and she was looking for a nightgown. The Killers, A Dustland Fairy Tale. Preston, Dressed to Kill. Your skirt is tight. He knows it's gonna hurt him, but you look so good. He'll fall in love. They always do. Thank you to Paul Lester for coming in to join us for Singles Club today. I feel like we don't see enough of you these days.
I should just come in, shouldn't I? Just pop by every day?
Yeah, every day. Obviously. Like it'd be quite hard, seeing as you don't live anywhere near here.
No, I know. Do they, the Guardian, they do like a helicopter, don't they?
Sure.
The Guardian copter would be perfect.
That's where all the money goes.
Yeah. I was going to have a word with them about that, actually. It's ridiculous.
I liked it when you used to bring a small child in with you.
Got to start doing that again.
That's brilliant.
I have brought in the entire back catalogue of Frankie Goes to Hollywood this time, which is
the same thing.
Yeah,
really,
it's virtually identical.
As a living human being child.
One is worth more to me than the other.
Is it a good time to say now that if you follow the Guardian Music Twitter, you get an update of new band of the day.
It's an excellent time to say it.
Yeah, right.
That's what we've done now. So you follow us every day automatically.
I think I should do new band of the minute.
That would be good.
Probably are enough, actually. If I came to see my front room, it would probably, you know, it could be done.
Of course, go to guardian.co.uk/music, the good old-fashioned Web 2.0 way to find all our content, including new band of the day. And you can catch Singles Club, the texticular version, which Tim and I put together each week. And that's guardian.co.uk/music. Next on Music Weekly, I'm a hustler, baby. That's what my daddy made me. I'm a hustler, baby. That's what my daddy's made me. Yeah, I'm a hustler, baby. That's what my daddy's made me. That was Hustler by Simian Mobile Disco, and that was me doing a little bit of Hustler by Simian Mobile Disco before. They're also known as James Ford and Jazz Shaw, a duo on the verge of releasing their second album, Temporary Pleasures. It was recorded in between jaunts to festivals around the world and James's duties producing for the likes of Arctic Monkeys and Klaxons. We featured their song Audacity of Huge on Singles Club quite recently, and it got mixed reviews. But if you don't like it, there are plenty more names on the list to choose from. Beth Ditto, Jamie Liddell, Griff Rhys, and loads more feature on the album. So I just had to know, how did they get that little lot to come together on one LP?
We basically sent out a lot of our kind of instrumentals to various singers, expecting people to be busy or not to reply, or expecting only to like two or three things that we got back. But we ended up liking seven or eight things, and that kind of sort of shaped the album. It would have been weird to leave a few of them off, so we ended up using a lot of them, really.
There were people that we'd been chasing since last time, people like Jamie Liddell, we wanted on the last record. But, you know, it was supposed to be an instrumental record. Really, the reason why we sent out so many vocals was just because all those people are kind of, you know, they're busy in bands and we just assumed they wouldn't get back to us.
We still have a love for kind of songs and vocals, and for us it's almost more of a challenge to try and make those kind of songs than to make dance tracks, really. So we got excited by the idea of doing some songs.
As is usually the case, like both in terms of recording individual tracks and in sort of like making albums and stuff like that, it kind of took a massive left turn. And it's kind of something that we really enjoy, is, you know, when we've got a plan for something and it turns into something else, sort of out of our control. It's that sort of point when it sort of almost feels like the track is like deciding for you. That's like usually the moment that we're both like, right, we need to start recording this, because that's usually the point that something interesting is going to happen.
Just wanted to ask about your producing duties. I don't know how much involvement you've had with the individual albums themselves, but you've managed to be involved with two of the most anticipated albums at the moment, which is the Arctic Monkeys and the Claxons album. I know that Josh Homme has been working with the Arctic Monkeys, but how much involvement have you had with either of those?
They started the album with Josh and did quite a lot of it, and that sort of set a lot of the template for the record and a lot of the sonic stuff. And then basically I kind of helped them off finish off three or four things for the record. But they are all really, really strong, and yeah, I think it's going to be a really good record.
You know, Simeon Mobile Disco started up out of Simeon. Do you ever see yourselves moving on from the, you know, the current setup and into something new and different?
I think probably, yeah, but you know, like we probably just call it something else and start again. We always have lots of daft ideas to like do, like drone records or, you know, kind of weird sided project things, and yeah, we're definitely going to pursue some of that, and even going the other way, like pop writing sort of stuff. But you know, we're kind of enjoying doing this for this period of time, so we may as well carry on doing it.
Definitely not going to make the mistake of calling it Simeon Mobile Disco, though. Jesus.
Yeah. What was wrong with that?
It was just like the worst name you could possibly imagine.
it was really just like the kind of default name that we had left over from the old band, and we kind of could get DJ'd gigs under that name, and so it sort of stuck.
I mean, it made sense.
It sort of made sense. Well, yeah, but even at the time, it was sort of, we thought it was a bit ridiculous, but then now I still can't, if a taxi driver asks me what the band name is, I still kind of choke on it. You know, it's pretty hard.
Bit of chat there from James Ford and Jazz Shaw. Audacity of Huge is out now, and the album Temporary Pleasures is out on Monday. Now, if you wouldn't mind, could you just tell us what you think of this week's interviews, please? Yeah? On the blog, yeah? Because last week we got hijacked by some maniacs. The age-old, are the Stone Roses a bit shit or are they amazing debate? We never get tired of that one. Post comments on this week's blog to tell us what you made of David Byrne, SMD, Singles Club and the sarcasm levels in this week's show. We're at blogs.guardian.co.uk/music. Last week's feature with No Name saw Alex Needham talking about Divine, the he-she muse of John Waters, who is great, I'm sure, but all I can think of when I see he-she is that in the 1972 film Pink Flamingos, he or she eats actual dog poo. That's true. It really was. She did actually eat it. Now, that is suffering for your art. Nothing quite so close to the bone this week. David Goth is the Welshman who checks over mine and Tim's appalling grammar and thinks up those witty headlines. Yes, he is the guardian.co.uk/music sub-editor, and he just loves 16 horsepower.
Horsepower were one of the defining alternative country bands of the 90s. Their frontman, David Eugene Edwards, is perhaps one of the most distinctive voices in American music over the last 15 years. Though highly praised during the decade they were together, 16 Horsepower only achieved cult success, but deserved the recognition given to bands like Uncle Tupelo, Giant Sand and Calexico for establishing the genre. Formed in Denver, Colorado in 1995, their name refers to an American folk song in which 16 horses pull the coffin of a loved one to the graveyard. As you've probably guessed, Kings of Leon they ain't. 16 Horsepower come from a proud tradition of Gothic Americana, with Edwards' music summoning a bleak and Bible-black world full of fire and brimstone. This is the America of Emily Dickinson, William Faulkner, and Cormac McCarthy, a land of churches, truck stops, prisons, and coal mines. It's a vision that sees mankind as inherently sinful, but presented with the comfort of faith and the promise of redemption, as in the song Black Soul Choir. Horsepower combine different types of indigenous American music. There's folk from the Appalachian Mountains, blues from the Mississippi Delta, outlaw country from the Deep South, and more recently, Native American music. But these traditional forms are given a darker edge when mixed with the incendiary post-punk of Joy Division, The Gun Club, and Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds. I first encountered Edwards' music in the documentary road movie Searching for the Wrong-Eyed Jesus, a musical odyssey in which singer-songwriter Jim White goes in search of a mythical American South. The scene in which Edwards plays banjo in the woods of Louisiana, singing the traditional song Wayfaring Stranger, held me spellbound. His voice is immediately captivating and transporting, a high, haunting sound that inhabits the song, channeling the spirit of an old, weird America. I felt compelled to investigate the work of this singer, who seemed as though he just stepped out of the past.
I'm just a poor wayfaring stranger, traveling through this hollow world. Ain't no sea, storm, no danger, in that bright land to which I go. I'm going there to see my father, said he'd meet me when I come.
After releasing four albums, 16 Horsepower split in 2005, citing spiritual differences. Edwards continues to make music with his band Woven Hand, exploring Christian themes and further embracing Native American music, even incorporating Cherokee chants into the chorus of Kicking Bird. Edwards' music has inspired a generation of musicians keen to explore the twisted heart of country, including William Elliott Whitmore, O'Death, and the legendary Shack Shakers. But like other Americana artists such as Mark Lanegan, Kristen Hirsch, and Bonnie Prince Billy, his voice remains one of the most compelling and deserves to be heard.
That was David Goff. And he was bringing you the feature with no name in association with 16 Horsepower. And before we go, Japantha made a suggestion about our beloved feature on the blog. He said, if I may be so bold as to make one suggestion for improving the cast, how about getting listeners to send in their feature with no name nominations/musings? The nominations from the regular presenters and guests seem to be running out, and anyone can record a 5-minute segment and send in an MP3 these days. Well, I reckon it's a very good idea, Japantha, and I've put it to the powers that be, but I think less of the you guys are running out of ideas, anyone can do this type thing, please. I think, not sure about the suggestion there, but
How do they know that we're running out of ideas?
I don't know, because we managed to get one in every show. But I like that idea a lot, and I really like the idea of getting you not to do some for us. So let's see what they say, and hopefully we'll have an update for you next week. A short set of hellos before we say our goodbyes. We are now Facebook friends with Chris Murphy, Joy Roy Chowdhury, Benjamin Try, Edgar Smith, North South Divide, Yvonne McLellan, and Paul Gethin. And if you want the dubious honour of being our friend, search for Music Weekly in Facebook, request, and we will not turn you down. Alas, we have come to the end of this week's show. and this is goodbye, Tim Jones. If I wasn't going to see you downstairs in about 5 minutes' time, I'd be devastated.
Bye.
Yeah. Listeners, find us at blogs.guardian.co.uk/music or subscribe by searching for Guardian Music Weekly on iTunes. But until next week, adieu.